We all basically were given our packets independently, and I turned mine in, and Carol collected the rest of them, and miraculously there was unanimous agreement, which I was shocked about. Although there was, you know, several good proposals, there was one that, to all six of us independently looking at them, was a little bit better than the rest. So I feel pretty good about that.
And the grant's coming from where on this?
It's coming from the state of Alaska. Several years ago, our manager at that time, Tim Rudy, there was a lot of discussion out here from basically the city dock to over here, kind of this waterfront area, that, you know, what do we want that to look like in 5 years and 10 and 20 and stuff. And so it was kind of to look at all the different uses that that could have and try to do as, you know, some kind of a multi-use plan that a lot of people would be happy with, if that's possible.
But, oh boy.
Anyway, but that's kind of what the goal is of this, is to, they are supposed to come in and, you know, meet with the Port Commission, meet with the businesses, meet with people in town, and kind of get input from all of those sources, and then at some point, and then their own ideas too, because that's what they do. And then they'll come with some kind of probably a preliminary thing and have some public hearings and try to get people involved in it. And then we'll come up with some kind of a master plan that this will come back to the assembly, and that will kind of be our guiding torch there to, you know, then start working towards whatever that is.
Anything else? Mm-hmm.
Assembly members Decker?
Yes.
McCloskey?
Yes.
Mitchell?
Yes.
And Manchak?
Yes. Item 13D, approval to surplus a police vehicle and items that were seized or impounded.
Move to approve impounded motorcycles and Camaro to be bid and sold, and to authorize the borough manager to use a boat broker to sell the impounded boat with all the net proceeds from all sales to to go towards the funding of a new police and fire communication system.
Second.
Been moved and second. Any discussion?
Just a real quick thing. The motorcycles were a couple homemade Harley-like type things, and so those were seized. The Camaro is actually the DARE program, and Sitka gave that to us years ago when they got rid of their DARE program, and I don't know if there's any left. But the car is, we don't use it, and the car is getting to the point where if we don't do something with it, it's going to deteriorate. And it already is. And then the boat is actually, was a seized fishing boat, 40-foot fishing boat. And we think it has a value of somewhere between maybe $70,000 and $80,000, $90,000. But we would prefer to use a broker rather than to bid, because there's all the paperwork and stuff you're required to do, and nobody here knows what, you know, the documentation issues. And so we'd like to use a broker also, because they have a farther reach in their advertising and stuff than we would, and kind of are in that market. I think we would do better, even though you pay a commission. I think they would be better equipped to do better for us, both the total sales amount and also all the paperwork. So that's kind of the reasoning behind that. But
how did we come by the boat?
But the fire and communication system, that's basically a 911 system, and our system currently is obsolete. But they're spendy, and they're in the neighborhood of $300,000 to $350,000. So this would help us get a long ways, and maybe this would, you know, if you can match other grant money or whatever, sometimes this gets you into the doorway. Anyway, that's kind of the scoop.
Thank you. Anything further? Call vote, please.
Assemblymembers McCloskey?
Yes.
Mitchell?
Yes.
Decker?
Yes.
And Mayor Jack?
Yes. Item 13E, approval of a contract of PND Engineers Incorporated for contract administration and inspection services for the WMSC Concrete Paving Phase 3 project.
Move to approve a contract with PND Engineers Incorporated based on time and expense and in the amount not to exceed $195,412 for the contract administration and inspection service, which is scheduled to be paid with DCCED grant funds.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussion?
And Carl is here if someone would like to get a brief what's going on there. So.
Sure.
Come on, Carl. Yep. That would be great.
Carl Johnson, 304 St. Michael Street. First off, this is a fairly high number for the work we're doing. The proposal they provided was for, it was a multi-bid as a base bid and added alternates. And we hope that as the project progresses, we discover how much extra material is going to be removed on the site to have some money left over and continue on with the work through a change order. So their proposal pretty much gets us all the way through the end of the fall on a T&M basis. And it's actually about twice as long as the current contract, construction contract would take. So expect that the actual payment to PND is going to be quite a lot less, but they'll have a person on site full time that'll be continually inspecting the project and the concrete rebar and everything, just like we did last year. I think the same person probably. And that project right now for construction is just the one big strip of concrete. I guess starting from the water, it'll be the first strip that we haven't done yet.
Okay. And again, this will only be charged out to us on time and material. So, like Carl said, it's not likely if they. We've got a bunch of other paving to do out there, but we probably maybe don't have the money. But this would be the inspection contract to do all of that work, but we're only going to do a small portion of that, so this should be a small portion. Again, it's just based on the time they're actually here. So.
This is paid for by grants as well. Yes. What happens if we don't use the grant money? Is there a time limit?
There is, and we could get an extension probably, but we hope. You know, there's a right at the beginning of the project is an area where there's a lot of potential for, and we know there's going to be some wood waste, and it's figured into the bid in a contingent sum to where it's in their bid, but if we don't use it, we don't pay them. And we hope that added to what's left, we can do some more concrete work, whether it's a portion of one of the added alternates we didn't award, or if it's maybe paving from Silvernail to that entrance, it's always so nasty. Or there's some areas around the bathroom
that they've allotted for that time.
There's
something we could do while they're here. I'm taking
their estimates are historically fairly high because they figure worst case, like there's contractors can run along. They've got overtime figured in there and all kinds of things that if we don't use it, we don't pay them for it. So even when if they were going to run the whole 13 weeks or something like that, we still probably wouldn't use that full amount because there's overtime and things in there.
And the grants. These grants we usually get, they're 5-year periods, and we're probably only into the second year, maybe third. Yeah, so we've got a lot of time left on it. So.
I think we got this one at the end of phase one concrete, right?
Yeah. And they're good about if you were right in the middle of something, you could get an year extension. They're really flexible. So.
I think our hope is to zero it out at the end of this project.
Right. Okay.
Anything further? Thank you, Carl. Oh, we'll put it.
Assemblymembers Mitchell?
Yes.
Decker?
Yes.
McCloskey?
Yes.
And Mayor Jack?
Yes. Item 13F, approval of the SEPA formal transition agreement. As I mentioned at the beginning, has everybody had an opportunity to read this through?
This new one?
Yes.
Well, it was emailed.
Would you like to recess for a few minutes for the opportunity to read through it?
No, I didn't get the email, though. I did.
The important stuff, there's 10 pages.
Yes.
Yeah.
I did get the first portion on it, but no, we're fine.
I think I could give a 5-minute version of all the stuff attached, and would that be helpful?
Yep, that would be great.
And then we could, if people need more time, they can do that. This sheet here, which has all the attachments and stuff, well, first of all, there's just a background memo for me, and it kind of gives the history of starting just about a year ago when SEPA proposed to take over the Thomas Bay Power Authority O&M agreement. And shortly after that, the city went through a period of time, probably about 3 months, where we had a committee and we looked at the different, you know, good parts of that and the bad parts. And at the end, the assembly approved a resolution, which is number 1213-1290. And in that resolution, it said to gave, I guess, me directions to continue ahead with the negotiations. And it also listed in that resolution some items that we were concerned about. Kind of jumping ahead a little bit. As one that was big to me was down here, there's something called the Buck Report. And what that is when this, when you take state of Alaska, we're in the state of Alaska's retirement plan. And if you remove employees from that, then there's a, because we have this, the state has this huge unfunded liability out there for they don't have enough money to fund the retirement the way it is right today. And they are doing things to remedy that. But so whenever someone withdraws some employees, and when these Thomas Bay employees were to leave and go to be SEPA employees, they would no longer be eligible to be in the state of Alaska's retirement system. So this Buck Report is something the state of Alaska requires. This is their independent people that look, these actuarial people that look at, okay, this is, there's going to be a bill to be paid, and what is it? So they did this Buck Report, and it identified two employees that would be eligible for the unfunded liability, and then they give a price tag of that. So I think the initial price tag is somewhere in the neighborhood of $160,000 that would have to be paid up front, and then after that there would be annual payments until the unfunded liability was paid. And they put an estimate of maybe the total price tag is $750,000. So for one of the most important things is we were concerned about the unfunded liability, and SEPA stepped up to the plate. You'll see that in the agreement that they said they would pay for it. And that really got the cities of Wrangell and Petersburg and Thomas Bay Power Authority out of that debt. So that was one big thing. There was some things our attorney was concerned about with liability issues, and they've addressed those things. So we have a little bit of liability for a couple of the employees that were Thomas Bay employees, but most everything else they have relinquished, and our attorney is fine with that. There was a couple concessions. So those were the two, kind of the two biggest things. The other issue that the assembly in our resolution was concerned about was the positions out there. So Thomas, the SEPA agreement actually has funded in their agreement, and things have happened recently here that it may have changed that, but in their agreement that they, all the positions would continue to be funded until at least next May, when that's when the manager that is now gone, his contract would have run out, and then they would reevaluate that position in the secretary position. Now, since then, both those people are gone. So, like I said, I'm not quite sure if SEPA at this time, since they don't exist, we'll take a look at that and see what's most efficient to do that. So anyway, Wrangell in December passed the resolution that kind of did the things I just talked about. Petersburg passed one in, was that January or February?
It was.
Of 2014.
January.
And they basically endorsed our resolution. So at that point, it was left, and I've been working with the Petersburg manager and their mayor actually over there, and initially with the SEPA folks to kind of get some of the initial things, our concerns down. And then at the end of the project or process, our attorney was involved to make sure that, you know, when you're going to sign some contract, that you're covered liability-wise and other things. So, as you can imagine, you get three attorneys in a room and they all back and forth. But I think the goal was that everybody realized that they something that all the communities, or Petersburg and Wrangell and SEPA, all wanted to make happen. So I think concessions were made by everybody a little bit. So, and then Thomas Bay, they have endorsed this this also as the Thomas Bay Power Commission has endorsed this process. Petersburg approved this last night at their assembly meeting, and then it's before us tonight, and then Thomas Bay has a meeting this Thursday, and they will, that's on their agenda for doing this. There's certainly some efficiency things that we believe will just make the whole process as far as how things move from the different entities much more efficient than it is today. I wouldn't even try to explain how it works because it goes through about six hands before it ever gets to where it's supposed to go. But anyway, that's in a nutshell, that's I think the concerns of in the resolution that the assembly had, that Petersburg also endorsed, I think those have been addressed, and certainly a document that has been taken about a year to get here, but I think it appears we've done all of the correct steps and looked at the various things and been trying to be as conscientious as possible with the agreement and like I said, having our attorney make sure we're doing the right things there. So anyway, that's what's before you.
Thank you. Is everybody satisfied with what's going on here? The information?
Pretty much knew all that. Yep.
Any further questions or comments?
We don't have a motion on the floor.
No, we don't.
No.
Okay.
So we're just generally discussing.
Let's have them, since we intend to have action, possible action on this, let's go ahead and have a motion and then we can proceed with our discussion.
Okay, I move to approve the assignment and assumption agreement between Southeast Alaska Power Agency, the Borough of Petersburg, the City and Borough of Wrangell, and the Thomas Bay Power Authority.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion now?
It's been a long time coming. I had a couple of questions for Jeff, maybe about the agreement. One to point out, this was an issue particularly for me, so I wanted to read for the public that about the Thomas Bay Power employees and those positions. It specifically does say under 6B, SEPA agrees to continue to maintain its office in Wrangell and also agrees to provide staff for the office. And then later in C, they talk about other Thomas Bay Power Authority employees. And they say, as a part of this agreement, SEPA has agreed to add a second regular employee for the brushing crew. So that's another additional employee in Wrangell. So that was a concern to me, and I'm glad to see that in there. I guess the part that's a little bit confusing to me, and Jeff, you mentioned it, is the indemnification section, section 13. I think 13B maybe is the most lawyer-ish. Maybe you can translate.
Well, maybe I can, and maybe I can't. And if it's something that, because I know the three attorneys.
It looks like three attorneys wrote this.
And I can tell you that all three of them had issues, and yeah. part of the issue was, I know Bob, our attorney, Bob Blasco, he felt that anything that, he was concerned that anything that happened in the future, that Wrangell and Petersburg equally share if it had something to do with Thomas Bay, okay? Mm-hmm. Petersburg's attorney didn't agree with that. His big issue was that if it was something where it was Thomas Bay, it should be collecting. But if it was something that either Wrangell's assembly took action by themselves or Petersburg, either one, that caused some liability issue, that only that community be responsible. So there's a, I can't remember in some of the, let's see here. But anyway, that was somewhere in this mess of attorney work, that was finally the concession that was, I think Bob finally agreed to that. He just wanted to make sure that Wrangell didn't get stuck with anything. One of the issues is that PERS, as an example, if there's a clause in here with the PERS that SEPA will reimburse us every single year, you know, whatever the bill we get, because Wrangell did the payroll. So we're kind of legally on the hook for the thing, but it's covered in here. We would get the bill each year. We would send it to SEPA. They would reimburse us, and we would actually pay the state of Alaska because we were the contract person for those employees. But say there's a clause in here that if, say, if the SEPA has a, there's a deal in here that if all of a sudden the state just goes bonkos, instead of paying 30%, they want a city to pay 200% of the value in some year. SEPA has a clause in here that they can come back and at least talk about it mm-hmm. and renegotiate. We just wanted to make sure, because it's Wrangell was the payroll person, that if SEPA says, no, we'll split it with you, because it's on Wrangell's tab, we just wanted to make sure that Petersburg was, you know, in with us on that, because they should be, because right. it was Thomas Bay Power Authority employees. So those are the things our attorney was concerned about, and wanted to make sure that language was in there, where there was things that applied to both of us. But there are a couple situations where if one assembly or the other caused some breach of the contract by themselves without the other assembly not taking part in that, their attorney felt that wasn't right, that, and maybe rightfully so, but we were trying to figure out some example, and we were having trouble actually figuring out something that we could do that. But anyway, that was the one concession I think we made, that there is one little clause here that allows if there's if there's some action that one of the assemblies take that causes some breach of the contract, then they may be on the hook by themselves and not equally with Petersburg. But if it's normal things that happen because of something that happens to, you know, because of Thomas Bay, then we would equally, in probably 99% of the things, we would equally be in the same boat with Petersburg and share equally anything that happened. So,
my understanding under this agreement, that once this is signed, it's only anything that occurred up to that point. Then SEPA has a responsibility at that point on. Unless it's something that occurred before that agreement was signed.
Now,
because they have the...
No, you're right, except for the two employees.
The two employees, yes, I understand that. Right.
Yeah, so if there's some...
Well, that's happened before this agreement signed,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah.
So...
But anything with any of the employees at the site, they would assume the responsibility for anything that happens after this too. So, even if it was something that happened before. But anyway, so the bottom line is, this was hashed out over about 2 or 3 weeks with the attorneys, and I think they all feel satisfied that, you know, that the product is something that, you know, the city should feel secure about, and that SEPA, actually, I will tell you that when we started this, and I know we had discussions with the assembly, that one of the big concerns was that we were going to get stuck with the PERS tab down the road. And initially, they wanted just to give us a chunk of money up front, and that was, and when it ran out, that was our problem. And they actually stepped up to the plate and said, as long as this takes, they will keep reimbursing us. So we were kind of surprised that they actually went that direction, but we're glad they did. Because like I said, the unfunded liability is at $750,000 and could be more than that. So there isn't a fixed amount with that. But,
well, and they've done other things, I think, to move this along in good faith. They, in their budget that they put together for this coming year, they budgeted for non-net billable expenses, which
Intel
is the things that Petersburg and Wrangell had been picking up in the past. They just went ahead and budgeted to pick that up. Until this closes, and they went ahead and budgeted for these positions that are no longer people in those positions, but they went ahead and budgeted for those as well. So I think that they're trying to show good faith that they want to move things along in a responsible way. They've addressed every concern that we put in front of them. So I just wanted to make sure I heard you correctly, so that they're going to give this the one lump sum for the PERS, and then every year after that, when we get a bill for the PERS, we give it to them and they pay it.
Even the lump sum, whatever the lump sum is, they'll reimburse us for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then each year the PERS bills us, they will reimburse us.
And just even as it fluctuates, they'll continue to do that unless some wild thing happens.
Like right now it's been 24% to 30%, so your annual payments could be, you know, $30,000 to $50,000, whatever. Mm-hmm. Now, if they PERS says, well, now that's 200%, SEPA has the right to at least to come back and talk about it, mm-hmm. which I don't blame them for that.
Sure.
And one thing, just for Mark's benefit, is before we had this, what was called the non-net billable. In other words, SEPA owns the project, and all of the manager and all the guys down at the plant, they were eligible to be reimbursed by SEPA through this net billing thing. But the office, the cost of the commission, the secretary, and the cost to run the office, which was run about and attorney fees or meeting fees and all that, that ran about $110,000 a year, and Wrangell and Petersburg split that. That will all go away. And the Thomas Bay Power Commission, I think they're actually going to have an item on their agenda that talks about the future of them, what, you know, what role or what, you know, what they could be of use for the two communities in the future, which I think there still can be a use for that. And maybe not meet like a monthly thing, but, you know, maybe if they come up with a project that would be common to both communities, it may be a committee that's already in place that could be used for some purpose like that. So we'll see what they come up with and take a look at it.
Any other questions, comments? All vote, please.
Assembly members Decker?
Yes.
Mitchell?
Yes.
McCloskey?
Yes.
And Mayor Jack?
Yes. Item 13G, discussion and possible action relating to recycling. I had this added basically just to get a discussion going on recycling. I know there's some efforts being made and and I don't feel that the public in general is well informed on what is happening and where they can drop off recyclable items. So, Carl, could you come forward and kind of address that issue a little bit?
Carl Johnson, 304 St. Mike's Street. Right now, there's actually quite a bit going on in response to the question about where to drop off. I looked on the board here for some reason, it's not hanging, but working with the Wrangell Cooperative Association, I've got a guy now in there that's really gone home about recycling, and he put together a list and worked with us on that. items. There's some people that are interested in electronics and the light bulbs and batteries and all kinds of scrap metal, all kinds of different things. There's a list for that. I'll get it posted out here, but for right now, those items are, there's places to bring them. It's not a full-scale community-wide recycling, but there are some things going on, and we'll try to get that disseminated. I think they're spreading pamphlets and stuff too through the Cooperative Association. But they've also gotten some grants recently that are looking at providing recycling containers and to us, and some shipping containers for use at the landfill for storing some recyclables. It looks like they're probably, they may get some money for a baler, a small baler for us. Wrangles also has a grant right now for to hire a consultant we've already hired to develop a recycling plan. It basically gives us a step-by-step to get from where we're at to full curbside. A truck comes up and picks up your recycling. What equipment, what steps need to be taken to get there. He should be here next month for site visit and public meeting, so we'll get that advertised for people to have some input into that process. And you know, we've got the biggest pieces, the trucks, the cans would have to be purchased, but there were some other developments as far as the whether we had to bail our recyclables before we could ship them or not. Well, there's some the new capabilities in Seattle where they can tip full 40-foot containers full of loose recycling. That we're trying to figure out the cost of that, so we wouldn't necessarily have to bail them. So right now there's a whole bunch kind of in the mix of what we can do. But there are some things right now that for small things, cans, electronics, batteries, and that's all. There's contact information on this list. And I wish we had it here, I would have shown it to you, but I'll get it put up.
Yeah.
Couple other things. The grant that he was talking about, it also will provide for a glass crusher.
Yes, glass crusher.
So we can pluck, instead of having to pay to have it shipped, glass is heavy and we can crush it and use it for fill materials and other thing within our own public works areas. So, and one last thing, that right around the corner is deer hunting season.
Oh, yes.
And in every year, you end up seeing deer carcasses at the end of the spur road and everywhere else where people dump them. You can dump them at the dump for free.
We've done that for years, but people don't seem to ever know it.
So there isn't a reason to dump it out in the woods or something like that. Take it to the dump and you won't be charged, and it will keep that stuff out of our roadways and parks and everywhere else that it ends up. So
the containers. Are there going to be containers for cans and containers for paper, or just...
It depends on how we roll it out initially. Eventually, it would be one, probably a 96-gallon can at your house that everything went in. It's the most efficient way, and studies have shown that the participation levels are much higher if people don't have to sort it.
Right.
And we have the trucks to dump it. If we have the small baler, it won't handle a full curbside recycling. We have to look at the cost for loose shipping. But if in between those two steps to full curbside with everything mixed in one can to where we are now, there may be a time where we could collect paper and things from the schools and offices and cans from different places and have a smaller scale sort of a thing. And so at that point, containers would be probably a sorted type of a thing. Or it could be a voluntary mixed recycling, but not citywide, because you may not be able to handle that at first. You may, if you get 200 customers or something to do a commingled recycling and a small baler, we can handle that without adding manpower. You know, but that's another part of it.
Yeah.
How much we can do without adding staff.
And generally, most of the recycling we do, there's some that we can make a few bucks on, mm-hmm. but for the most part, we lose money on it. But the flip side is anything we can get out of the revenue stream or the freight stream of shipping our garbage is still cheaper than doing that. So, you know, if we broke even versus paying, $100 a ton or...
$110.
110. So if we can just get it out of that waste stream, shipping it to Eastern Washington, you know, even if we lose a little bit, it's even if we were losing $20 a ton, it's still better than paying $110 to ship it. So and doing a good thing in the process. So anyway,
and we already have about a year ago we started a new solid waste contract with Republic Industries, and right now we're only using the garbage portion of that contract. It also includes a whole set of recycling rates and a procedure for doing that. And right now those rates kind of equal out to where, like in a commingled recycling, where everything's mixed together, as the prices fluctuate, it's just about at a break even. You make just a little bit right now, but that's saving you $110, $150 a ton. So. Mm-hmm. But you know, of course, there's that additional cost that go into having the program. And then Chris recently did a program where she worked with a number of members in the community to kind of have them do some recycling and kind of how to what their impression initially and throughout the sorting and collecting their garbage, how kind of as their thoughts progress through that, if they how they felt towards the end. It sounded like it was a positive thing. She might be able to talk to that.
Yeah, can we have sure.
Chris Hatton at 107 Park Avenue. Yeah, it was my master's thesis that I did, and the goal was to learn a little bit more about how people communicate about environmental issues. And I chose recycling because it's something I'm passionate about, and I chose a purposeful sample of 10 households here in Wrangell, including myself as one of those, and talked to Carl ahead of time so that anything I did might be able to be replicated the next time so that people wouldn't have to relearn how to recycle or how to sort trash, as I chose to use that terminology. And it was fascinating and interesting. My advisor recommended that I choose people that I thought would not be keen to do it because those are the folks I would learn the most from. And I think I did. I was very focused on my form of communication to them and how I spoke and what I said. And so the essence of the study was really communication about a pro-environmental behavior. And so it was easy for most people. Like I said, having chatted with Carl, and folks instantly asked that question, well, I have a container for glass and a container for paper and all that. And the answer was essentially no. They ended up with three. They had their regular trash, they had their commingled recycling, we called it, and their glass. We kept those three things. And folks found it surprisingly easy. And I think the key in the communication part was to not portray my values and my desires onto them and not judge when they said, yeah, it's a pain in the ass to do this or that. And I agreed. It's like, yeah, that's their reality, and I had to respect that and understand it. So I think I've learned to approach things that are pro-environmental from a different perspective and be very open and very an effective listener so that we can hopefully move forward in a bit more sustainable way, whether it be recycling or other things that the city's considering. So it was a fascinating experience. I could talk for a lot longer, but I'll stop there unless folks have questions.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Wow.
You know, I had the opportunity to talk to Ben Curtis, and they have, City Market has a cardboard baler. A baler for cardboard, I should say. And they're willing to take it, whatever cardboard they can get, as long as it's clean and dry. And they'll take that, you know, I mean, there's a lot of stores I know that use it, just dump it in the dumpsters. And talking to Ben Curtis about that, it was a substantial savings. He he might make a few bucks on the shipping it out, but actually where he saves money by not having it going into the trash stream and into a dumpster, because it substantially lowered the amount of dumpsters that's required for him. But the biggest problem he has, and a lot of the stores have, is shrink wrap, plastic shrink wrap in these plastic bottles. Mm-hmm. That to me seems like the biggest issue right now. I know the Boy Scouts and the Lions Club, as far as aluminum, it's not just aluminum cans. They will accept any aluminum.
Yep.
So they have a couple of bins around town. And I think educating the public as to what they can do with these items is the biggest issue, a large issue here. And if we could get rid of this plastic in some manner, that would sure help too.
Just the education portion on it. I have right out there at work a container has aluminum rope right on top of it. Yep. And every time you pull it out, you have to separate. And there's a garbage can right there, an aluminum can right there. It's like education. You know, one little step just to throw the garbage in one, the aluminum in the other one. It's like, how hard is it? But I understand this education portion on it. And granted, it may be a pain in the day every year, but I believe also the same thing. It would be very good for the environment to start doing it. And there, the cost.
Well, you can send a kid to school, but you can't make them learn.
True.
Down south, I have a friend that's actually in that business, but they put all of their garbage in one container, and it goes to a main sort facility. And on the sorting facility, the machinery divides and separates, and it goes out on conveyors every direction. And it's a multi-million dollar business for it. But it's a lot bigger community. They're servicing communities with 100, 200,000 people. And on the small scale, of course, that machinery wouldn't be feasible to do. But
that would be the whole state of Alaska.
Before we did the solid waste contracts, the solid waste authority folks went down to Seattle and visited Urbanco and there's this big three solid waste guys. But two of them have big sorting facilities in Seattle, and the outfit we're contracted with, that was one of the facilities. Like you say, it all dumps in and goes every which way, and that's, if we did a commingled, that's where it would go, is right down to their place in downtown Seattle.
Wow.
Right into the beginning of their production line. Be sorted and probably go to China. So. But recently, they couldn't take loose 40-foot containers had to be palletized and baled. Now they have capability to dump loose, so we may have some other options to speed up our ability to get started.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes.
I can't remember, but does Wrangell's website have anything on it about recycling or some of this information?
I don't think so.
I think that'd be a good idea. I mean, it's a relatively easy, cheap, you know, just have a page on there with, and then it can be updated with different things as they come up and as you're, you know, going through with your plan and stuff like that. Because I think I've had 10 people in the last 2 months ask me about, how come Wrangell doesn't recycle and this and that, and, you know. So, and yeah, I didn't have all the information that you had just now, and so I think that would be a good thing. And it's significant when you start separating your paper out and your, you know, your kitchen scraps and your glass and your plastic and your aluminum. There's not much left, you know, so it's not that hard to do.
I'll post that WCA flyer on the website tomorrow. I'll tell you about that before the meeting.
Great.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good.
And if a person composts much, they wouldn't have hardly anything.
Yeah.
I do.
Well,
it's a good idea.
Any further discussion on that, Anna?
Nope, I think that's...
Okay, we'll move on to the next item. 13H, approval of the Wrangell Medical Center's fiscal year 2015 budget.